This is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. I'm so excited to be back from the holiday. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving with friends and family. And if you weren't able to be with those that you love, I hope you were able to find joy and gratitude. Holidays can be a tough time of year, and I'm sure at one point or another, we will be covering some of those emotions. On this show, we are going to be talking about fear and ways to overcome it. We're also going to be featuring singer-songwriter Matt Martino, who just finished playing sax with the Lone Howl in the tribute of the Last Waltz on Saturday at the Varsity. If you missed that show, you really missed a wonderful show. There was about 400 people in the large theater in the Varsity, and it was amazing, a whole host of artists. You also may remember Matt from his sold-out show last November at the Old Feet Store in Cobden. And if you like what you hear tonight, he will be playing at the Varsity on May 11th, 2019. So tonight on Encouragementology, we're going to be talking about overcoming fear. You know, we've all heard the words paralyzed by fear. You know, the inability to move in any direction and the tendency to stay stuck and obsess with what ifs. I think we've all done that. You know, fear isn't just being scared or terrified. It can also be classified as agitation, anxiety, anxiousness, apprehension, care, concern, disquiet, nervousness, sweat, unease, or worry. So there's lots of different ways that we can feel fear. A simple and useful definition of fear is an anxious feeling caused by our anticipation of some imagined event or experience. It seems pretty technical, but we'll really dive into it throughout this show. Medical experts tell us that the anxious feeling we get when we're afraid is a standardized biological reaction. It's pretty much the same set of body signals, whether you're afraid of getting bitten by a dog, getting turned down for a date, or even getting your taxes audited. That should be coming up pretty soon, huh? Dr. Carl Albrecht says there are only five basic fears, out of which almost all other so-called fears are manufactured. Can you believe that? Just five. But they really lead into all the other fears, irrational or rational, that we have. One is extinction, the fear of elimination or ceasing to exist, the fear of death. Consider that panicky feeling you get when you look over the edge of a high building or a balcony. The next one is mutilation, the fear of losing any body part or of losing the integrity of any organ, body part, or natural function. Anxiety about animals such as bugs, spiders, snakes, and other creepy things arise from fear of mutilation. I can tell you, for one, I have an irrational fear of June bugs. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you can picture yourself enjoying a wonderful spring or fall, I think they're out in the fall, day and or night, and you're just sitting outside enjoying the night, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes a June bug right into your head. They're so unpredictable. Loss of autonomy, the fear of being immobilized, paralyzed, restricted, enveloped, overwhelmed, entrapped, imprisoned, smothered, or otherwise controlled by circumstances beyond our control. In the physical form, it's commonly known as claustrophobia, but it also extends to our social interactions and relationships. Separation, the fear of abandonment, rejection, and loss of connectedness, of becoming a non-person, non-wanted, respected, or valued. The silent treatment that you could get from a group can really have a devastating psychological effect. So, you know, the fear of separation can just be not being noticed or welcomed. And then the last one is ego death, the fear of humiliation, shame, or any other mechanism or profound self-disapproval that threatens the loss of integrity of oneself. The fear of shattering one's constructed sense of lovability, capability, and worthiness. That's all. Just those five. They can be thought as forming a simple hierarchy or feararchy. So just to remind you, extinction, mutilation, loss of autonomy, separation, or ego death. So what are you afraid of? Could you attach a deeper meaning to the things that you're afraid of? I mentioned my fear of bugs, which I realize is irrational. My father used to tell me all the time, it's so little, it's not going to harm you. But for whatever reason, it's instinctive for me to completely lose my mind. I also, and I'm going to admit it tonight because we're talking about being real, I have a fear of balloons. I know, completely irrational. It really makes me sound unfun. But if you've ever taken a helium balloon and held it up against your ear, it is a strange sound, almost like you're underwater. So for whatever reason, I have a fear of balloons. They're also unpredictable. You know, when they start losing their helium, they can just waft over into your space without warning. It's not only the rubber balloons, but it's the Mylar balloons. So for whatever reason, that obviously goes back to something a little deeper. Is that something everyone knows about you, your fear? I mean, I just told you mine. But do you try to hide that part of you? Is that something that you keep to yourself? Carl Gustav Jung, the great Swiss psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, argued that we all have certain traits that we hide. From the time we were little, we realized that this was necessary if we wanted to be accepted. The set of features that we do not accept in ourselves is like a shadow. It emerges at some point in our lives. Next to the shadow, we develop what Freud called the ideal ego, which is a self that we create to fit into our environment and not to be rejected. The rejection of the shadow causes many problems because when we do not accept ourselves out of fear, we don't love ourselves. I found this really awesome quote. Love softens you, fear hardens you. Love opens the universe, and fear isolates you into yourself. Pretty powerful. What would you do if you weren't afraid to accept yourself, recognize yourself, or be rejected? That would be the true art of self-acceptance. It means to have self-respect, a positive self-image, and unconditional self-acceptance. Needless to say, it doesn't mean being arrogant, conceited, or thinking that you're better than anyone else. It means having a healthy regard for yourself, knowing that you are a worthy human being. If you could achieve that, you'd be free and would enjoy the love you have for yourself and for others. True acceptance. It seems like a foreign concept. You know, we all have different personas we adopt to get us through life. It's the medium through which we present ourselves to the public. It includes our personality, our social roles like parent or business person, or image, or mannerisms. It could be the style of speech that we have or even the clothing that we wear. We have more than one mask. The term persona refers to the collection of masks in which we wear. Obviously, we have a different mask for each role, for each situation of life. For example, we do not portray ourselves in the same manner at work as we do maybe with our spouse or with our children, or at a baseball game, a club meeting, or even church. You know, I am what I would consider a pretty strong businesswoman. I'm very assertive. I speak my mind. But when it comes socially, I actually hold back and I don't actually feel as strong socially as I do in business. So I have different personas that I take on. I also have a mask. This is kind of a funny one and maybe something that you'll relate to. I am a big talker. I know you can't believe that, even if you're listening for the first time. But every year at school, I said, I'm not going to be the big talker. I'm going to get an A in conduct. I'm not going to get an E in conduct. I am going to go in and I'm going to be quiet and I'm going to be reserved and studious. And so I tried to put that mask on. It didn't quite fit. I got there, and maybe within the first, I'd like to say week to 2 weeks, but I doubt it was actually that long. It would go back to Kendall always talking. So, and I did not get an A in conduct ever. In fact, my first grade teacher said, she talks more than I do, and I teach the class. So that can just tell you how it went from then on out. So right now, we are going to take a quick break and listen to some music by Matt Martino. I love featuring independent artists. Number one, music makes me happy. I'm sure it makes you happy. And it's so often that there's such great independent artists that you don't have an opportunity to hear. For those of you who already know Matt Martino from his days in the Music City, you're familiar with his catchy, blue-eyed soul playing style and engaging personality. For those of you who are just discovering Mr. Martino, you found him at the right time. After cutting his teeth in Nashville amongst some of the best musicians in the country, Matt is now moving forward as a solo artist who can grab the attention of any crowd in any room and not let it go. So I'm excited for you to hear his song, The Show Must Go On.
Is a road never ending. I walk till I can walk no more. With the rain falling down on my shoulders, this feeling I can't ignore. What flood came to drown you in sorrow? Don't hide there in your house of glass. Prepare for tomorrow. I know that this too shall pass. I will not lose faith in you. And deep inside I still believe that no one goes around, goes back around in time. So even when the pages turn, I'll see you further down the line. Cause you were a friend of mine. This world keeps on turning. This heart, I can take you there. I can see light up ahead, and I keep both feet on the ground. And I will never lose my way right back to you. Well, I know someday we'll all be dead, but that don't mean we've reached the end. We only begin. Planet to a galaxy. Time marches on and it won't stop for me. I know it won't stop for me. This world keeps on turning and turning. From darkness there comes the dawn. And this flame is eternally burning.
If you're just joining me, we are talking about overcoming fear, and we just learned some irrational fears that I have. If you've missed it, I'm just going to have to tell you. Bugs and balloons, specifically June bugs. Now, don't grab a June bug the next time you see me and throw it on me, or get me balloons for a holiday, please. Anyway, we also talked about different masks and ways that we hide our fears. It's important to be aware of your personas and pay attention to the ones you would like to change. I always felt that being agreeable was a more desirable trait. I always want to make others feel comfortable, so this was a perfect way to do that. But always being agreeable means I'm not being heard. Just because I may have a different idea or opinion doesn't mean that it won't be embraced or accepted. So now, I'll catch myself and insert my opinion. Instead of holding my breath in anticipation of everybody's reaction, I'm confident about my ideas. What are some of your personas? Which ones do you wish you could change? Now, we were also talking about self-acceptance. In order to love ourselves and others, we must grow in self-esteem, which is confidence in one's own worth or abilities. Self-respect, a feeling of satisfaction that someone has in himself or herself and in his or her own abilities. Now, what's the difference between self-esteem and self-confidence? Well, self-esteem refers to how you feel about yourself overall, how much esteem, positive regard, or self-love you have. Self-confidence is how you feel about your abilities and can vary from situation to situation. I may have a healthy self-esteem, but low self-confidence in situations involving math, which is actually true. I'm absolutely horrible at math. You're learning so much about me. How do you regard your self-esteem? Do you feel confident in your abilities? Do you have overall confidence, or do you feel good in a few things? Confidence is one's value as a human being. It's a precious psychological resource and generally a high positive factor in life. It is correlated with achievement, good relationships, and satisfaction. Possessing little self-regard can lead people to become depressed, to fall short of potential, or to tolerate abusive situations and relationships. Too much self-love, on the other hand, results in an off-putting sense of entitlement and an inability to learn from failures. Research suggests that self-esteem grows by varying degrees until the age of 60, when it remains steady before beginning to decline in old age. So there's still hope. You can definitely continue to work on your self-esteem. See, if you identify with this person, okay, or know someone similar, she has low self-esteem. She constantly feels like she's not good enough. This concept has developed over her entire life. She's been in a series of unhealthy relationships, is frequently belittled by her boss, and constantly tells herself, "I suck. I'm not worth it. On the positive side, she's confident about being an amazing chef, a caring friend, and having the ability to be super organized. She knows and believes this about herself and feels confident in these areas. By focusing on things you're confident in and working on changing your negative self-talk, you can improve both your self-esteem and your self-confidence. Negative self-talk. We've talked about that before. It's so easy to do. One thing goes wrong and you start cutting yourself down. By continuing to reiterate the bad things, you focus on that. And then you find that the things you are good at really have lower priority. So it ends up being, I'm just not that good. I might be good at this, but overall, I'm just not that good. That's where we need to change it. We want to focus on the positive things, really build those up, and let those take over the negative self-talk. The Argentine psychologist Walter Rizzo proposes some keys to improving self-esteem. So the first one is encouraging self-praise. Every time we do something good or positive, we should praise ourselves. Look how well I did. Congratulations. Really say that out loud to yourself. Rewarding yourself. An achievement of our lives, no matter how small, deserves an award. The prize can be something simple and something you enjoy. This is a healthy way to trigger the reward centers in your brain. Eliminating repressive beliefs that keep you from strengthening yourself. Although sometimes we put limits on our own feelings, sometimes we let them out. What's wrong with mourning in public or showing your love and affection for someone else? Don't be afraid to do that. Not being ashamed of your success and your efforts, but rather enjoying them. When you love yourself, your self-esteem improves, which makes you more confident. When you're more confident in the areas of your life, you begin to increase your overall sense of esteem. Let's say that again and slower this time. When you love yourself, your self-esteem improves, which makes you more confident. When you are confident in areas of your life, you begin to increase your overall sense of esteem. When we think about our emotions, we tend to think about them solely as states of feeling. For example, we may describe happiness as the state of feeling joy or pleasure. Psychologist Robert Polchek says that there are really 8 basic emotions. I love how it's just breaking down to just a few things that we have to worry about. But 8 basic emotions: joy, trust, fear, surprise, sadness, anticipation, anger, and disgust. Emotions have a long evolutionary history. They're not only adaptive, but they've evolved over time in order to increase our reproductive fitness. Emotion plays an important role in our overall survival. It involves both our cognition and our behavior. So, for instance, let's say that you were approached by a snake. So this is threatening event, right? You're approached by a snake. You would conclude that you're in danger. That's cognition, which would cause you to feel fear, which is emotion. Your fear activates the fight or flight response. As a result, you slowly back away from the snake in an attempt to escape. That's a goal-directed behavior. So the topic overcoming fear does not mean avoiding fear. Fear is a natural response and one used to alert us of potential danger. Biologically and evolutionarily, all negative or distressing emotions like fear, disgust, or anxiety can be thought of as survival mode. They signal the body and the brain that our survival and well-being may be at risk and are specifically designed to motivate behaviors and bodily responses that can most effectively deal with those risks and threats. Okay, so even your irrational fears. I'm scared of bugs, but not snakes. I'm not really sure why. But you know when you have that instinctive fear that you have to do something, you have to act. That's important. And something that you don't want to deny, you want to pay close attention to. Whenever an emotion is triggered in us, our bodies are instantly and unconsciously affected in a variety of specific ways. When we experience the emotion of disgust, for example, our eyes tend to narrow, our mouths to shut tightly, and our bodies move away from the object of disgust. Disgust is typically triggered, again, unconsciously, by something or someone that may pose an immediate health risk to us, such as rotting meat. Not only the smell, but you immediately turn your, that's not something good I need to be close to. It may contain dangerous parasites, for instance. Or, for example, a person comes toward you and they have open, festering sores, or maybe a cut, an open cut, and they may transmit some potentially dangerous infectious disease. You're going to immediately go past that person and shy away. So negative emotions are normal. Here's three reasons why. First of all, they're natural. As human beings, feeling sad, stressed out, anxious, afraid, it's all natural. And it happens on a daily basis. Furthermore, it's acceptable to feel that way. When we say things like, oh, we need to smile more, get over it, we're telling ourselves that this is the optimal state we can be in, and therefore we're denying the natural emotion or state of mind for the moment. We're telling ourselves we shouldn't feel sad or anxious or stressed. And our mind desperately wants us to let those feelings come out and be listened to. So it is actually positive to feel those. The difference is we don't want to stay there. If we always tell ourselves to smile when all we want to do is cry, we are psychologically mistreating ourselves, which in the long run will negatively impact us. You know, we have to be sad. It's okay to be sad. I had someone tell me one time, invite sadness in. Just ask them to leave at the appropriate amount of time. The next one is negative emotions make you aware. Negative emotions exist for a reason. They protect us. They make us aware of dangers and let us know that something is not working for us. For instance, fear helps you react to danger. Anxiety makes you more aware of potential threats, and guilt makes you reconsider past actions that may have been harmful to others and to you, and allows you to make amends. And the third one is negativity is a motivator. No one changes because they're feeling good. We change when we feel something is wrong and making us unhappy, and we can't bear it any longer. So negative emotions prompt us to act upon our current circumstances and really generate more positive changes. So we're going to take another quick break. I'm excited to introduce some more music to you. The independent artist we are featuring tonight is Matt Martino. Matt established himself as one of Nashville's premier up-and-coming players and writers with the release of his 2007 album, Let It Shine, which garnered Grammy attention in multiple categories and actually launched his career. The subsequent year saw Martino touring throughout the country, and songs from Let It Shine, the album, found their way into movies, TV shows, and commercials. My intro and exit to Encouragementology are actually from his song Naturally, which was featured on the popular show 90210. So this one that I'm going to play next is actually from Let It Shine, and it's called The World.
Sit back, relax, close your eyes and breathe. Just pretend that for a moment this is easy. 'Cause the world is not so big as it seems, and there's no use in crying, staring out at strangers in an overcrowded room. Searching for one friendly face is all you need to see. Wandering down the avenue underneath the streetlight moon, wondering if that's the place that you were meant to be. Your path is growing narrow, you're far away from home. have to walk alone. The world may not be alright by you. The wolves are howling at your door. You're in more trouble than you knew. A sign of hope to get you through. A light that you can see. You need a rock to lean on. You need a guarantee. The world may not be alright by you. You'll be alright by me. Find the moment that it all began to change. All the plans you made began to come apart. Oh, but girl, you just got lost while you were following your heart. And you can always start again. The sun is setting and your dreams begin to fade. Be afraid. The world may not be alright by you. The wolves are howling at your door. You're in more trouble than you knew. A sign of hope to get you through. A light that you can see. You need a rock to lean on. You need a guarantee. While the world may not be alright by you, but you'll be alright by me. Is your heart still beating? Is your world still turning? Is the fire that you started all those years ago still burning? If a good night's sleep is all you need to put an end to all this craziness, close your eyes and think of me and just remember this. The world may not be alright by you. The wolves are howling at your door. You're in more trouble than you knew. A sign of hope to get you through. A light that you can see. You need a rock to lean on. Need a guarantee. The world may not be alright by you, but you'll be alright by me. Oh, oh, you'll be alright by me.
So thank you for joining me with Encouragementology. We are talking about overcoming fear. This is just a chance to really expose some of the things that we're afraid of and find new ways that we might be able to handle those. Before the break, we talked about negative emotions and how those can really be helpful. We don't necessarily need to push those away immediately. We need to take note of them and then categorize them. But what happens when you can't keep these negative emotions in check? For instance, you get a thought, and instead of following that thought down the happy trail, you take a side path to doom. The mind is a powerful control center and can shoot holes and inject fear into almost any situation. For instance, a blemish on your face becomes a cancerous tumor. If you take a flight to another state, you think about a plane crash. Your child not attending a specific school turns into him or her never getting a good job. Why do we do that? These are examples of catastrophic thinking. Now, it might sound extreme or maybe even silly, but before we know it, a situation we're concerned about becomes a full-blown worst-case scenario. clinical psychologist Dr. Joe Dilley, shared some examples of how quickly our thinking can go south. In this scenario, if my mom insists on holding Thanksgiving at her house again, then I'm going to be stuck having to defer to her timing, which will disappoint my in-laws, who seem to always want us at their place at the same time my mom wants us at hers. We can't be in two places at one time. Ugh, we're always disappointing someone. Another holiday ruin. This always happens. Have you said that? What about this one? My boss called me into her office for a meeting tomorrow. She never asks me to meet outside of the regular staff meeting. It's not performance review time or anything, so I don't know what we'd be meeting about unless it's something bad. I hope my job is safe. Our sister company just laid off a bunch of people. I guess my job could be in jeopardy. Oh, I'm dreading that meeting. Now I can't sleep. I think we've all had those. Catastrophic thinking is problematic because it triggers the very outcome we're trying to prevent, an unpleasant or painful state of affairs. For example, worrying that a pimple is a tumor activates the same brain regions and emotional apprehension that occurs when the bump actually does turn out to be a tumor. Catastrophic thinking also spikes the stress hormone, cortisol, and that reduces our ability to react effectively. In layman terms, it could create a bit of a boy that cried wolf. I love this quote by Mark Twain. Mark Twain famously said, "I'm an old man. I am an old man and have known a great many troubles, but most of them never happened." You rationalize these thoughts with overgeneralized statements like, "Makes sense. Things never go my way. I'm always on the short end of the stick." Overgeneralization is a course of thinking where you apply one experience and generalize to all experiences, including those in the future. For example, if you once gave a poor speech, you may think to yourself, "I always screw up speeches. I can never speak publicly without messing up." Self-limiting overgeneralization will keep you from meeting your own potential. These are common thoughts like, "I'm not good enough," or "I could never do that." They keep you from taking risks or next steps or harming your career and social life. Now, Catherine online actually said that she has a fear that her fear is going to get in the way of her goals. So Catherine came to us on Facebook, and I want to encourage everyone to get involved with the Encouragementology show. It's really fun to be able to read your feedback and your questions on the topic. So every Thursday, I will post the new topic for the Monday show. And that way, you could either send a private message if you feel like you want something private and anonymous, and that's perfectly fine. And I will respect that. And you could also just put a message out there for everyone to see that we can share on the radio show. So I'll have that on the Encouragementology Facebook page and also the WDBX Facebook page. So I hope that you will get involved. It always makes it more fun. But I definitely understand Catherine's position, letting fear get in the way of her goals. I mentioned this on one of the other shows, and it was all about the 5-second rule. I'm just obsessed with it. It's from well-known speaker and author Mel Robbins, and her idea is to activate an instinct within 5 seconds, okay? So if you get an instinct towards a goal, if you don't act on it within 5 seconds, you'll talk yourself out of it, okay? So I use the example, you know, you may see someone at a party or a networking function, and you say to yourself, "Oh, I need to meet that person." And then if you don't take the first step to walk towards them and really get ready to meet them, you'll start shooting holes in that. "Well, they probably are busy. They really don't want to meet me. They look like they've got food in their mouth," whatever it may be. So maybe, Catherine, try that. The way that you do it is you count backwards. And there's something about that psychologically that you can't say, you can't count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have to go the opposite way. So it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And then you just go. You take a leap of faith and you just activate. So give that a try. I'd love to hear your feedback if it worked for you. So overgeneralization can worsen your thoughts, making you feel that everyone dislikes you and that you can't do anything right. So how can we cut through these thoughts and institute a reality check? Well, you could start by reframing. Reframing is a process where you identify negative and unhelpful thoughts and replace them with positive and empowering ones. First, you have to identify your thinking patterns. You got to recognize when you find yourself negatively thinking about yourself or not doing the activities because you think you'll fail. Be more mindful of your thoughts, even writing them down in a journal. Once you record your negativity, you can recognize a pattern of thoughts, and that way you can catch yourself. Next, you want to challenge yourself. Look at your thoughts that you've written down and ask yourself, is this true? Would someone else view those thoughts the same way? Challenge each thought. Really, every time I speak, I mess up? I mean, you'll see that's simply not true. You may find no one noticed. You were even nervous during your presentation. Then you want to replace your thoughts. When you're thinking negative thoughts, use self-talk to think more positively. For example, the public speaking example. I'm a terrible speaker and I always screw up. Replace it with, I'm more prepared and ready to give a great speech. The reframing to positivity can counter your social anxiety and help you get through the presentation. Look at experiences that cause you anxiety and challenge that rather than thinking it's a threat. I love reframing, and you can actually take any negative idea or thought and you can turn it around by reframing. You don't have to say, yes, I do give good speeches, instead of saying, I'm a terrible speaker, but you could see that you're reframing it to say, I'm more prepared and I'm ready. First, you have to be aware of what's happening. You have to be mindful of your thoughts. And you have to be mindful when your thoughts start to create the end of the story. Have you ever done that? You know, the what ifs. They haven't called because I probably didn't have enough experience. She left early because I'm sure I said something that offended her. He isn't home. I bet he found someone else to talk to. Worry is a special form of fear. It's what humans do when simple fear reaches the part of the brain called the cerebral cortex. We make fear complex, adding anticipation, memory, imagination, and emotion. Worry is an amazingly common. Believe it, even one out of four of us, about 65 million Americans, will meet the criteria for an anxiety disorder at some point in their lifetime. Even those individuals will worry excessively on most occasions. Even those that are going well, you know, you can find yourself, whatever helps you careen off the road into worry. It could be your children, it could be your job, it could be anticipation. So we are going to listen to one more song tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the independent artist Matt Martino. Matt's career has been the kind of steady grassroots growth that any independent artist dreams of, with no signs of slowing down. An evening with Matt Martino will consist of many songs you know, a few you probably don't, and you'll leave feeling like you made a new friend. So, if you liked what you heard tonight, mark your calendars now for an upcoming solo show at the Varsity on May 11th. This next song, the last one I'm going to play tonight, is actually, again, from Let It Shine, and it's called Don't Stop Now.
All right, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you're hearing something you like. If not, well, I'm sure this next guy will do it for you. Give it up, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Martino.
Until sunrise, safety. Stories with a stranger, caught inside by this curious desire. Butterflies and belly ties, sensing danger. Well, I'm all right, but I've never been this high. Do you know just what I mean? And can you feel me when I dream? 'Cause I can't hide this innocence inside.
Was music from Matt Martino. We were featuring him, an independent singer, songwriter, piano player, and sax player, and recently a t-shirt mogul. If you follow Matt on any of the social media outlets, you will see raging sales in t-shirts. You can also find his music on iTunes, Spotify, basically anything out there. So definitely look him up. We are talking about overcoming fear. We've talked a lot in this show tonight, just different ways to handle fear. We talked about negative feelings and what that really means and how that physically can alter our body, and also mentally what that does. We also talked about different personas and different masks that we might wear, ways that we hide maybe our fears and we present somebody different. We also talked about getting in touch with our true self. Wow, that's difficult. You know, we build up these different personas to protect ourselves. We definitely have to act a certain way at work or in public or different areas. So, I mean, that's important. But how can we just let our hair down and be ourselves? We also talked about worry and what worry can do, and that it's actually pretty common. How can we stop worrying? One thing that we can do to quit worrying is stop the story where the facts end. You know, today we're finally beginning to understand the biology of worry, to pinpoint what is happening in the nerve cells of the worrier rather than his soul. It turns out that some of us may be born worriers. Our autonomic nervous systems are cranked up higher, and our blood pressure, pulse, and respiratory rate may be higher. And we may be less sensitive than others to the brain's natural stress modulators, which are activated by the neurotransmitter GABA. People who have a good supply of GABA or brains that are especially responsive to it may be in innately cool and calm. You know those people, they just never get rattled. They have a high level, a good supply of GABA. If your story starts spinning out of control with what ifs, what if this happened? What if that happens? Try putting a stick in the spoke of the spinning wheel and stick to the facts. Stop the story where the facts end. That's really hard to do because naturally we want to have a complete picture of what we're facing. The issue is you rarely write a rosy ending. Now, you may be this person. I actually have a friend that does this, and I'll be listening to her story, and then all of a sudden, it just seems to kind of careen out of control. And I'll say, wait a minute, did that actually happen? Wait, he really said that, or they actually did that? And she'll say, no, but I know that's what's going to happen. So I'll have to remind her, no, you don't know that that's what's going to happen. So stop the story where the facts end. Boy, that would just be a clear-cut picture of what's truly going on. So if you can stop the story, then you can regain control of your thoughts. And once you do this, you can take an inventory. First, this starts with being present and in the now. If you're in the imaginary land of what ifs, you first have to transport yourself back to the present. Now, Eckhart Tolle gives you a way to do this. It's pretty cool. First of all, you start by noticing how your body feels. I also tell this to people that tend to live in the future. You know, I am a brainstormer. I love to brainstorm, and I love to think of new ideas and new ways. I have a daughter that does this too. Actually, both of my daughters do this. But if you spend all your time living in the future, you're not really enjoying the present. So when you find yourself worrying or creating what ifs or really spending too much time with what's going to happen down the road, you can use this technique. So you can bring yourself back to the present by first noticing how your body feels. Where are your feet? Let's all do that. Where are your feet? Now wiggle your toes. Okay, so you can really feel your toes. Stretch out your hands in front of you and then wiggle your fingers. Just wiggle them like spirit fingers. Now roll your shoulders back. And now take in a deep breath. Okay, welcome back. You're back with us. Now, where is the fear on the needs assessment scale of priorities? Is it critical? Are you in harm's way? How about your loved ones? Is there immediate danger? No? Okay, then you have a minute to explore some different options. Being reactionary relies on old habits and knee-jerk reactions. Oh my gosh, I know this is what's happening. First, why don't you try being strategic, fully understanding the entire situation and taking your time to find an appropriate solution. Meg Selig is the author of Change Power, 37 Secrets to Habit Change Success. She gives some different ideas to you. First, it's not happening now. Yes, it's certainly possible that a catastrophic thing could occur, but it's not happening now. This phrase may help you see that at least at this moment, you're safe. I do that too. I'm not typically a worrier. I really don't let things get to me. Things can slide down my back pretty quickly. But the first thing I do, if I do feel that stress where my heart starts to race and my body tenses up, the first thing I'll ask myself is this real? Like, is this happening right this second? And if it's not, then I'm able to sort of take a breath and say, okay, well, let's find a solution for it. The next thing she says is, whatever happens, I can cope. This statement reminds you are in charge of your own inner resources and gives you the determination to meet the challenges of life. The next one she suggests is, I'm causing my own suffering. Could I stop? The first part of this statement has its origins in Buddhism's Four Noble Truths. I'm causing my own suffering. Again, this question, could I stop, comes from motivational studies suggesting that asking yourself a question tends to be more motivating than simply saying, I will stop. or the judgmental stop causing your own suffering, which only creates more suffering. Asking, could I stop, helps you see that you have a choice. Of course, if there's truly a catastrophic thing ahead in your way, like divorce or death in the family or natural disaster, the best thing to ask yourself is, how could I best prepare for this event? Planning your action steps relieves your anxiety. It's true, worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength. But courage is feeling fear, not getting rid of fear, and taking action in the face of fear. So let's say that again. It's true, worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength. But courage is feeling fear, not getting rid of fear, and taking action in the face of fear. So your challenge is, the next time your thoughts take you careening off a path and into the ditch, pump the brakes and give yourself a reality check. What do I know to be true? And what could I do next? This will give you time and peace of mind to take a step in the right direction. So you're listening to Encouragementology. I really appreciate you staying with me tonight and learning a little bit more about fear and what's irrational and what's rational and just ways that we can overcome that. And I hope you'll get involved. Ask me questions, provide feedback via the Facebook page for Encouragementology or WDBX's Facebook page. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a fabulous evening. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw to the past was clear.